This is a podcast from policyreview.tv.
Well, we've had, first of all, really graphic picture of the availability of choice of place of birth across the UK from Mary and Jay. And then we moved on to Roz, talking about ordinarily resident and destitution policies and really no choice at all for some sectors of women in this society. We now have about 5 minutes for questions. So if anyone has any questions or comments, could you put your hand up? And if you do speak, could you tell us who you are and where you come from?
Dottie Watkins, Head of Midwifery Sheffield. It was interesting to hear the two speakers this afternoon because I feel that we've covered sort of almost all of society in the two groups who spoke. As the head of midwifery, the issue that Roslyn spoke so passionately about has been around for a long time. And I'm very clear as the manager with the instructions that I give to my midwives. We talk about productivity and quality and costs and all sorts. And the women who get no care during their pregnancy cost us a hell of a lot more when they come in as an emergency. So my message to them is, I implore you to give care. You give care to the people who turn up. You encourage them. The stage two officers will see them in hospital. Tell them that. We have a fast-track system where we get them in quickly. The stage two officers will see them, and instead of 6 months, they'll say, have you been resident in the country for the last 12 months? And the answer is usually no. And I told them they'll take them off into an office and they'll talk to them for 20 minutes. Not to worry about it, to attend for care. And the midwife's role is to give care because we can reduce the deaths. And I'm very, very clear about that. And if every head of midwifery says the same, we will be doing better for women and it will keep our costs down and our length of stay and all those things that we've got to grapple with day in, day out.
Are there any questions? Mary, would you like to respond to anything? Say anything as that you didn't get a chance to earlier.
Well, I would just like to say that what we've talked about on the platform in this last session has covered a very broad area of policy and very different areas of policy. One of the things that I'd like to emphasise, I think, is that it sometimes can sound as though choice of place of birth is an extra, and it's not such a pressing issue as ensuring that there is basic care and safety and support for the most vulnerable families. And I would like to say that I think support for vulnerable families is a very, very high priority indeed. What I'd like to emphasise is that it's not an either-or, because a social model of care is particularly important for people who are vulnerable, who've had a difficult time, who have been subject to abuse and violence. And being in a context where there's a focus on the person rather than too much of a task focus is a vital part of making them feel valued and giving them the opportunity to have a good start as parents and for babies to have a good start in their lives. So I feel very privileged to have shared the platform with Roz, and we've had that focus from both sides.
Roz, would you like to add anything?
I'd just like to say how heartening it was to hear the speaker from Sheffield about the approach that you're taking in your service. And as you say, it would be wonderful if the heads of midwifery across the country would be able to take that approach, because certainly I think when we talk about the needs of the most vulnerable, we often see that as a cost rather than actually as a saving. I think there's many things that we can do which will make economic returns for the health system, as well as actually providing the care that women need. And I agree absolutely with Mary's comments about the connection between choice and between support for the most vulnerable women. I think the ability to listen to what women want is absolutely fundamental to the care that all women seek to receive.
I don't understand why you've got no questions.
I'm a student midwife. I just was wondering, what is it that that women who don't have any status can do in order to avoid the costs that they will be presented with?
The NHS trusts are required under the regulations to inform the women of the charges that will be levied and to issue an invoice. And if the woman can't pay, the trusts are required under the guidance to write off that charge. So there's really not a lot you can do in terms of avoiding those basic obligations. What's very, very important, I think, is to explain to the women what the process is and to make absolutely clear that if they are unable to pay, they will still receive the care. And quite often this means working with the overseas visitor manager or whatever that position's called within the individual health services to make sure that that message is coming from them as well as coming from the midwifery staff.
Ros, do you have any idea the level of this problem or where it is across the UK?
It's quite dispersed across the UK precisely because of policies which send refused asylum seekers out of London. So I'm sure many of you in areas which aren't previously having lots of refused asylum seekers are seeing women coming into your area who don't really have connections to local communities. They've often been sent there by the UK border agency simply because there's some accommodation in that area. So it is happening right across the UK, and often it's in the more dispersed areas where some of the difficulties arise because it's a new issue and the women don't know what the rules are. The overseas visitor manager may be more than usually assertive in seeking the funds. So it's something which is a big issue in some of the areas with high migrant populations, but increasingly an issue in areas which don't have such high proportion of their women from overseas.
Thank you. Are there any more questions or comments? If there...
Yes, Mary?
If we've got time, can I just unpack a little bit of... we had limited time to present the quite complex data to you, and I just wanted to unpack it a bit. To help you appreciate what those data show. And Jay will put me right if I make any mistakes. We found across the UK that 90% of women had access to an obstetric unit within an approximate 30-minute journey time. And as I said, when you put the obstetric unit and access to a birth centre together, it came down to 58% because obviously a considerable number didn't have access to both types of unit within an approximate 30-minute journey time. And then access to a home birth in an area where the rate was 5% or higher applied to 11% of the population overall. But when you put the three things together, it came right down to just over 4%. Because obviously in some areas where you've got better access to a birth centre, you don't have the good access to or you don't have the high home birth rates. And some areas where you have good out-of-hospital provision, but not an obstetric unit that's within a 30-minute approximate journey time. So that's just to explain to you, if you were looking at the numbers and thinking, I can't quite make sense of those. And we would, as Jay has said, very much value any feedback that you have got, because we think that so far there hasn't been enough done to really push things forward, that there is a choice guarantee and it's plainly not being met at the moment. Other people may choose to use other methodology in order to assess that, but we think it is vital that there is an agreed kind of methodology so that an assessment can be made, because it was a fantastic guarantee that was being made. It is in the interests of women from a range of clinical and social backgrounds to have access to a social model of care in a variety of settings. And I just look forward to continuing to working with you to bring that about. Thank you.
Oh, we've got a question. Kathy.
Thank you. I mean, as we've got a little bit of time for questions, I just want to raise something that may be a bit controversial, but I'd really welcome the opinion of people who are working with users on this. And that is, in a situation where we do have good evidence that services such as home birth and midwifery-led units decrease interventions, should we actually be making them the default model of care for women? And is, in fact, choice a problem?
My thinking on this has changed a little bit. I don't think there's one right answer, and I think there's lots more work to be done, and that probably in different areas, different people will want to try doing it in different ways. I know that there are some areas where it is suggested that all women who are suitable in terms of clinical criteria should be referred to the midwife-led birth centre. And I started off by thinking I thought that was a really good thing. But I think it can be quite difficult if women are not wanting to have labour without an epidural, and they're being referred to a unit where that is the norm, it feels to me as though you're setting up opposition. So I certainly think it's always easier to push at a door that's swinging open than to push at one that's resolutely shut. At the birth centre where I did some observation, it was a very clear part of the contract or the agreement that women opted to go there. And one of the things that the midwives said was very helpful for them was that then they knew that the women were saying that they did want to try to have their baby without having an epidural. They wanted to cope using their own resources and the midwifery support and the water and the positions and the other equipment. And therefore, when labour got tough, and let's face it, labour does get tough, the midwives felt that they understood what the women's aspirations were, what their desires were, and they'd had an opportunity to talk through with women and their partners in advance what labour would be like. And so it was easier for them to do this difficult juggling act of giving support and being firm and saying you can do it, because they knew that was clearly the woman's intention. So my thinking did shift a bit, but I wouldn't take a rigid position. And other people might say, no, it works fantastically well if we opt everybody who is suitable into birth centre care, midwife-led care, away from a labour ward where there are epidurals being provided. That works for us. One thing I do think is important is to keep those two kinds of care separate and not to say, well, we'll start providing monitoring and epidurals in the birth centre so that women don't have to transfer if they decide that that's what they want. Because I think you have to provide an environment where there is a clear philosophy of normality in order for people to develop that culture and confidence with that culture.
Thank you.
I think one of the challenges in communicating about choice, particularly with women from different cultures, is having that base level of understanding within the communities about what those choices are. Particularly big issue for women new in the UK, I think, who may have come from health systems quite different to those which are standard here. And I think there's some really valuable work that can be done in investing in just building that awareness in the communities before the women actually reach the health services about what these choices really are. I'm sure many of you encountered women who think that anyone short of a doctor is an insult in their treatment as a pregnant woman, and yet others who are so accustomed to traditional birth attendance that they simply don't attend for care until something goes wrong or they're actually in labour. I think there's some really interesting work that can be done to actually build that understanding of choice within those communities.
Thank you very much. And I'd like to thank Mary J and Roz for some very stimulating facts and figures, and I think it's given us a lot to go away with and see what we can do to make the services more acceptable and accessible to the people that we care for. So could you thank them very much? And don't go.
Hi, I'm Jill Pidler, Community Midwife, Epsom and St Helier University NHS Trust. I just wanted to make an observation about choice we were just talking about a moment ago. I was looking after an antenatal lady, and I spoke to her after she had the baby, and her choice was to go to the obstetric part of our unit and have an epidural. That was full up, and we've recently had a... birth unit, midwife-led birth unit open, and there was a room in the birth unit, and she ended up in the birth unit, and she had a water birth, the lights, she had the one-to-one care, and you know, and she said it was fantastic. And actually, that though that wasn't her choice, she felt that she had a positive outcome because she had the birth that maybe she didn't realise that she, or the confidence that she could have. So, you know, you've got to look at choice in different ways sometimes, I think.
And I think that leads us to think about when it is that women need to make that choice. And there are some services that women don't have to make a choice until perhaps later on in their pregnancy or when they're in labor, because you don't really know what you want until you're experienced pregnancy, and if you feel more confident if everything appears to be going right. So maybe that's something that that type of service, that model, is something that we could look at expanding.
Helen Shallow, Calderdale and Huddersfield. Responding to your question, Kathy, I think it's a really interesting question that you've asked, and we have two different experiences with our co-located birth centre and our freestanding birth centre with regard to the what used to be a midwife-led unit next door to the labour ward moved two flights down, and by default, women tend to go there. And our transfer rate, we know this with alongside birth centres, is much higher. And I think there's, I think we're in this whole process of change and turning that juggernaut around. So I think we're in that process. But I do think there's something in the women who choose to go to our freestanding birth centre do make very deliberate choices and seem to, and that's from 16-year-olds up to, well, whatever really, but they make deliberate choices, and they seem to do quite a lot of preparation, and they know exactly what the birth centre is. But the women who go to Calderdale, and by default, I've noticed that some of those women aren't fully aware of what the birth centre is and isn't, and because it's so much easier to transfer for the epidural. And the other thing I've noticed as a part of the change process is that often when mothers who have had, or the women's mothers who attend those women, will often don't understand, and that's happened in both birth centres, don't understand the when we're not doing, when we're actively watching, waiting. And we've got a lot of education to do with mothers because of their birth experiences, because they can be 40 years old, used to the sort of medicalised 4-hour IVs and all that. Sometimes we've got 30-year-old mothers of daughters giving birth. So there's still lots of antenatal preparation and education, but we're in that process.
Yeah. At the top.
Oh, thank you. This hasn't got anything to do with today, but I'm just taking the time to advertise a conference I'm involved with in London on the 20th of January. It involves female genital mutilation, and I've got some information here if anybody would like. Thank you.
Thank you. Liz.
I want very much to say a bit of what Helen said, but I do think that the answers lie with us. She's been bossy again. Everyone's bossing me at the moment. That the answers lie with us as midwives. I think whether we default people to the birth centre is only a very small part of the question, because we seem to have done a compromise with trying to provide continuity of anti- and postnatal care, but it's much more about providing continuity between. And it's up to us to talk to women all the way through that pregnancy continuum so they have the information and they have the knowledge to make the choice that suits them. And that may well be, I want to go and have an epidural, when they know the rights and wrongs, the pros and cons of epidural. And women who at the outset might say, I want an epidural, will have talked to their midwife, built up that relationship with her, and choose not to go down that route. And that lies with us, and it's about our confidence as well, because we have many, many midwives who have lost the constant confidence in working with women to make those decisions. And for me, it all comes down to that midwife-woman partnership, and that's what we have to build up and nurture.